last year when Swamiji was stricken with the illnesses that Padman Hriman were in India, in the hospital and so on. There was some discussion when the actual word cancer became uttered as to whether or not this was a truth that should be a thought, that should be broadcast around the world, or should it be kept more quiet. And Swamiji's comment, after things sorted out a little bit, was, I want everyone to know. And it was a little interesting, you know, sort of to see how that evolved. But what came from that is something that I've just found so remarkable in the last few months, which is because he was ill in a way that for many people would have been life-threatening, and because he had to undergo these chemotherapy treatments, which he rejected after a couple, but for a while we thought he was going to be going through this many months of extreme physical challenge. This 24-hour prayer program started around the world, and because we are all around the world, we were able to fill 24 hours worth of prayer, and people everywhere signed up, you know, from 8 to 10. Palo Alto's section was from 9 to 11, and we had it all organized, and everybody was doing it. I mean, I'm talking mostly to people who knew about this. But what happened reminds me of, and I'll backtrack before I finish this thought, in the early years of Ananda, we were really children with our father. We are still children with our father, but we're older children now. We're adult children. We've been made to grow up in certain ways. In those early years especially, there was a great sense of his project. We were here to have a party, and he was going to do his project. People came to levels of maturity at various rates of speed in terms of understanding that it also had something to do with us. But there was always a great thought of how much Swami could give us or what Ananda could give us, and we were having to grow into another understanding. And I remember vividly one evening, it was at the San Francisco house, the ashram we had there for 10 years. Swamiji was leaving on one of his trips, and it was his practice often to bless us all individually before he would leave. And that night he said, I'm always blessing you. Why don't you bless me? And then he sat in the front, and the only word I could say is made each one of us come forward, because this was before the Festival of Light. This was before many people were, or any people perhaps, were giving Kriya. I'm not sure if there were a few other Kriya ministers besides Swamiji at that point or not, but there was only a handful of people who ever lifted up their hand in blessing toward anyone else. And the presumption of presuming to bless him was a little hard, but he insisted. And of course, what happened was, it was one of the most deeply inspiring nights that we'd ever had, because instead of thinking passively, suddenly he was asking us really to step into his reality. And this is what you've heard so beautifully described by the three who spoke before me, that his reality is always one of how can I uplift? And that the thought that, oh, I'm not worthy, is really the thought that keeps us from being able to uplift. In other words, the more ego consciousness, the less there is of God. So it was a practice. And it was a watershed moment in the history of Ananda for us on many levels in our relationship with Swamiji. And I speak our collectively. There were a handful of people there. But because all of us are linked on this sort of divine golden nerve wire, anything that happens to one devotee in our spiritual family in one way or another becomes the reality of all of us through this mystical force called attunement. And it was a watershed moment because it set the stage for our maturing as disciples, which is, yes, of course, discipleship is about God realization, but how will we find God on this particular path? There are hermit paths. There are paths in which you just turn your back on the world and go off and live somewhere by yourself, thinking only of yourself and your relationship to God. This isn't one of them, and you probably noticed that. It wasn't Master's way, and Swamiji has epitomized for us all these years what it is to be a disciple. And in any other ashram context, even in India in the early years that he was there, the habit of our tradition is to elevate a great disciple who is leading in the master's name, his own flock. He becomes the guru in his own right. It's a role that Swamiji has never accepted. And there's many, many, many reasons for that, which in the context of this talk I don't need to go into. You've heard them all. But here's one of them, which is learning to be a guru is not really our personal challenge. Our personal challenge is how to be a disciple. And so more than anything else, that's what he's epitomized. And even in that humility to say, give to me, of course I need your help, and of course you are qualified to give it, if for no other reason than just out of loving friendship. And so when this prayer circle started around the world, I got so many interesting emails. And the interesting emails were all about how much they were receiving of Swamiji's consciousness as soon as they turned it around and tried to give to him. Now, isn't that just the epitome of the whole spiritual path? This is, of course, what Dhyana was describing to us so beautifully. Give to others, give to others. Now, there's another aspect I just want to touch on in these brief moments, which is that Jyotish speaks of 40 years. I can speak of a little less than that. I mean, there's a lot of years represented here. There's a lot of experiences, like picnics in Golden Gate Park, which, when they're so beautifully expressed as Jyotish explains them to us, we can sort of all sit there, and through Jyotish's, the vividness of his experience, that same blessing is transmitted to us. You know, we've always loved to hear Swamiji talk about his experiences with Master, because in the vivid retelling, that vibration comes to us. But even though we don't like to focus on it, Freeman said it so graciously, Swamiji's in a different phase of his life. For one thing, there's just so many. I remember in 1971 or two, him speaking of a future time in which he would be a world figure. And some girl said at the moment, "Oh, that sounds really neat," just like that. Swami very seriously looked at me and he said, "These are the good old days." Because there was an intimacy that is now just not possible. One body can't be everywhere. But then we have to ask the real question, then what is the future of Ananda? You know, a handful of people will have known Swamiji, and as our work expands, percentage-wise, that handful will become smaller and smaller, won't it? It's very significant. Whoever mentioned Paul, I think it was Riemann who mentioned Paul. Paul never even met Jesus. He met Jesus through a vision. That was, of course, a real meeting. And then he went out to people. He had never met Jesus, and he went out to people who were hearing about him after he died and created a movement that changed the world. It's a very, 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 I can't say strong enough, I can't put enough varies into it, how important that fact is. Because, yes, there is a certain indescribable joy in the face-to-face experiences we have had with Swamiji. When he was talking a few years ago, it was even 10 years ago before he went to India, when he was talking about how tired he was, and he said one day on the telephone, "I just feel like I could just slip away so easily." And that was partly just because he was so out of his body, and his body was so weak. I said, "Sir, well, we certainly, you've given, you know, 100 lifetimes in one already. We couldn't possibly even dream of holding you back if it's your time to go." I said, "But it won't be as much fun to be on this planet without you." So sweetly, he said, "I know, I've been through it." He had 3 years with Master, 3.5 years. He's built 60 years of discipleship on 3.5 years because he received him. Now, Swamiji plays the role of the perfect disciple, but if we want to master any art, we want to tune into those who have mastered that art, isn't it so? And our lives are discipleship. And if we want to master that art, we have the perfect vibration right in front of us. And I don't mean in front of us physically. Yes, you'll see him this afternoon. For a few more years, we'll be able to see him. But it's here. It's in the heart. It's in the spiritual eye. It's in the practice of Kriya. So many things that can be said. It's in giving back what has been given to us in the spirit and in the way that he has done, that our salvation will come to us. Divine friendship. It's very important, that word, divine, because you see, that's without the body, that's without the personality, that's without all the little ego-gratifying or frustrating things that happen. It's just the divine speaking to the divine, that spirit of infinite freedom, of a true disciple channeling his master to us if we would receive him. That's the essence of the friendship. Don't look to the past, even though the past is beautiful to contemplate. Don't look to the past, because all we ever have is now. You know, the definition of the divine spirit is that it's always with us. It's a magnificent thing to realize that God is not less or more with us at any moment in any of our incarnations. You know, those great ones whose lives have been given to guide us, they are not less or more with us, whether they're in or out of the body, whether we're in or out of their presence, whether we're on the same continent or even the same plane. They are as close to us as we love them close. To those who think me near, the Master said, I will be near. That is our legacy. That's the closeness of divinity in all its manifested forms, and most beautifully through our divine friend, Swami Kriyananda. Bless you.